Back to the Thomas and Mac for more Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Nick Williams drives. Nick
Double
Williams,
dribble.
He traveled. Or they call a foul on Tom White? Come on. He was completely off balance. That is a horrible call.
He double dribbled before he put it down.
McWilliams was completely off balance. That is an absolutely atrocious call.
It was a frustrating game. John and Robert on the call there. Learfield, IMG College. A lot of things went right for Fresno. They delivered. You know, it wasn't like it was fluky. They played a very good game. Eric Brown is here, UNLV assistant. That's a good team. And, you know, I said it after the game here in the arena, and I said it during the game, and I'll say it over and over again. That guy's a great coach. Justin Hudson is a really good coach, and, yes, he has an experienced team, but they're getting better and better defensively, and he's one of the best, well, I'll call him a defensive coordinator. He's a head coach now in the country.
You know, he does a great job. He did a great job at San Diego State with those defenses when he was there. And you saw that on Saturday. That's exactly, the way they're defending is the way San Diego State used to defend. And I think they're 19th in the country defending the three-point line. It's because they don't get in rotations. They don't get beat off the bounce. You know, their ball screen defense is always solid. And on the other side of the basketball, you know, they just spread you out. And they've got, I think they're a top 20 team in the country shooting the three. So, you know, they defend the three. They shoot the three. They've got good guards. I think it's a tough group of kids. You've got a kid in the middle in Grimes who can block shots and rebound. So it's a really good basketball team.
And I thought they got better play out of their point guard than maybe they – I'm not saying it was the best game their point guards had played all season, but I thought those guys played well too.
You know,
and they hit shots.
Yeah, they did, and they're really skilled. And I coached Noah Blackwell at Long Beach State, and Noah's got a great feel for the game, a really good IQ. But, you know, Deshaun Taylor, I mean, when you put players on the floor that can play multiple positions and do multiple things, you know, you're really at an advantage offensively.
Both of the stars on the team seem to have an edge, too, which always helps Huggins and Taylor have a little nasty streak.
They do. And, you know, Taylor had that last year, and obviously Huggins played for Coach Menzies in New Mexico State. So there's a lot of, connections there. But, again, even last year we played them, I thought that was the toughest group of kids that, we had seen. You know, they're just tough kids on both ends of the floor. They're old. You know, again, we talk about older teams this day and age in college basketball having an experience. But that's an old team in terms of minutes played and games played.
So let's point to a couple examples, because I think the fans are driven nuts by the young thing all the time, right? But let's point to some examples of where you can see it on the UNLV roster. One, clearly, Robotham plays a different sort of game than much of his teammates, in terms of being composed most of the time, not getting too emotional, and that comes with 4 or 5 years of playing college basketball.
It does, because he's been through the ups and downs, and he's been through, wins and losses. And, in this day and age, there's stats on everything. I know there's one stat of it's what's it called? It's not games played. It's not minutes played. It's game experience. And I think we're like 240s in the country in game experience. And Reno is second in the country in game experience. And I guess that's based off minutes played and obviously the amount of games you play. But, yeah, freshmen aren't consistent. Some sophomores aren't consistent. And we're trying to get that consistency, and you see it at times, and you'll see it throughout a game. You'll see it for a week, maybe not 2 weeks or 3 weeks, but, we're getting – again, I think we're close. I know some of those scores don't indicate it, but, you look at that stretch we had Mbake out, who's our best frontline defender. We got him back now healthy, and, again, it was a 5-point game the other night, and, our margin for error against a team like that is pretty small, but I think we're going the right direction.
To finish on the theme of – age and experience. This guy might not be that experienced, but age-wise, he carries himself differently. You can see the way he plays. Nick Blair, it seems like, well, defensively, I think he has a better understanding of some of the younger big guys, but even offensively, now he'll make some mistakes slowing it down, but generally, he seems to be at a slower pace than a lot of the other guys.
We kind of joke, we call Nick old man, because Nick kind of has that old man's game. Nick is very intelligent, and Nick is very tough, and when you put that in a 6'6 frame, you have the ability to play inside out and the ability to be effective on both ends of the floor. And you're right, Nick plays at a different pace. And I think we've talked about it on the show before. When freshmen start to have the game slow down for them, that's when they become really effective. And, obviously the game slowed down for Nick a while back. And Nick's IQ and his toughness and his just feel for the game really makes him versatile for us.
So what are we looking at now? 22 games, 23 games into the season. Is there a little battle for playing time now at the four with Nick Blair because of his defense versus Tomboy, and obviously Joel can score with anyone in the conference. He's instant offense. But
right.
Are they now fighting at the same position for minutes?
No, they're not. I don't think they're fighting for minutes at that same position. Again, you know, I think Joel's done a nice job of playing at the three for 2 months. Then we threw him over the four for the last 2 months, and he's done a good job of learning that. But you know, you get in certain games, and there's certain matchups that benefit us, and there's certain matchups that benefit the other team going against one of those guys at the four. So it all depends on the flow of the game. If it's defensive or a rebounding issue, obviously Nick's pretty good, and both of them could stretch the floor on the offensive end. But it's just, you know, you go through these games, and you could tell right away some kids have it that night, some kids don't, you know, and then it comes down to a matchup thing as well. So we like having the versatility of both of them, and, you know, there's times this year when we played both of them at the same time and we went super small ball.
Well, I noticed in this last game, and really nothing set from a rotation standpoint. I mean, you guys are constantly trying to feel things out, especially at the beginning of games. We'll get into the starts of late. But there was actually a moment in the last game against Fresno where you did have Mbake, Blair, and then Tomboy back at the three.
We did, and we did that because we would like to get Joel back to the three, and it's a better rebounding unit for us when Joel's at the three. And Fresno State's a very good rebounding team, and it just gives us a different dimension. You know, when Joel's at the three, he could really pass over people, and again, depends on how Bryce is playing and Trey's playing and Amari, and just kind of how the flow of the game's going.
How is Tomboy in game in terms of dealing with frustration? Because he's a really demonstrative guy. So you watch him come to the bench, and sometimes he's getting the quick hook. How is he? Is it one of those like, hey, we got to calm him down for a second, then we can get through to him? Or
he's just a very passionate kid. He's a very passionate person, and he's a very passionate player. So when things are going well, you know, he's really, really excited. And when things are not going well or he's frustrated, he lets that show. And we've talked to him about, hey, you know, you just need to kind of keep an even keel and not show all that. There's a really good thing about his emotion that, you know, he plays hard and he shows his emotion. That's good to a certain extent, but you don't want to let it, you know, kind of take yourself out of the game.
He's always the first guy up the tunnel, running full speed. And myself as a portly individual, I'm always worried about taking the charge.
You know, I think he's going to be okay. You know, he's kind of narrow. He's kind of slim.
I don't think so.
He doesn't weigh a lot.
He's got a lot of elbows and knees, and he already broke someone's finger.
This is true. He broke Dave Hall's finger.
He did. He broke the official's finger.
I think he'd be okay.
I don't know.
Just take it in the center.
Sort of envelop. Yeah, exactly. Envelop him in all the padding. Let's talk about this matchup. It's a different matchup tonight from your side because Mbake's back. His absence was glaring in the game up there because they could just throw down to bigs. You know, they really have one big in Swan, and he knew no one was coming over at help side and no one was going to block, and he just bullied you guys.
Right. And that was a strength of ours earlier in the year. You know, we had Mbake and JTT and Shakur and Joel, three all in that front line, and that was one of our strengths defensively at the beginning of the year. And obviously at Air Force, you know, I think I told you before the game, we're concerned about the lack of length because length does give Air Force some problems the last couple of years. You know, Swan and Scotty are two very good inside-out players at 6'7", but if you can get some length on them and just make things difficult for them, it changes the game.
I like Swan. He's an old-school guy because it sounds like I'm mocking on him, but he's not real defined.
Right.
You know, he's kind of a below-the-rim guy.
Right.
But he knows what he's doing, and his bread is buttered inside of, like, 12 feet, and that's where he operates. And if he needs to get nasty and throw people around, he does it.
He can shoot it. He can bounce it. He can post up with his back to the basket. You know, he's averaging 8 rebounds a game. He's a great inside-out. You know, I tell guys all the time, you know, both those kids have played the rotation for pretty much any team in this league, you know. And Scotty's averaging 17 points a game. You know, he's going to be in discussion for second team all conference, and you know, Scotty had 34 last time out against Wyoming. So they're two very good, versatile, tough inside out players.
So where's Mbake right now in terms of conditioning and burst? Because it's been a slow return. You can tell he's not 100% in terms of leaping ability and explosion.
For a couple of weeks, you know, we were checking with Brian, our trainer, and just monitoring. Hey, you know, where is he percentage wise? Where is he with his wind? The last week or so, he's been pretty good in practice in terms of, you know, getting consistent reps and not taking himself out too often. Is he 100% in terms of shape? I don't think so. Or even, you know, his explosion? No, but I think he's getting really close.
And I thought it was big in the last game from half to half. And I don't know if it was exactly the first and second half, but I know there were a couple of moments early on, he didn't finish, and he came down one time, and he's like, all right, like almost screaming at his hands.
Right.
And I don't know if that is because he's not 100%, but it was good to see him later in the game. He had a chance to finish a couple. He made a layup. I think he also threw one down. I think mentally it's important to get some makes and, you know, around the rim so you can finish.
I agree. And then for certain players, you know, when you it's like a hitter in baseball. When you sit out, you know, hitting's all time in. For him, you know, when he's out and he's not getting reps at catching and finishing or catching and shooting, you know, that's his rhythm, you know. And when he's not able to do that with sitting out with an injury, that takes away from his rhythm and his timing, you know. And I think he's getting that back in practice now.
Defense, too, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You can throw.
Being a step behind or being a step ahead, how you get your fouls.
I'm not going to say that I think he's regressed from last year, but I'm seeing some things that he's struggling on that I don't remember him struggling on last year. Maybe I just wasn't watching as closely, but there are times he's having trouble with the screener, and once the roll starts,
right?
You know, because explain to us and the casual fan out there, you want your bigs to do what on these screens?
See, you're referring to ball screens,
mm-hmm.
like pick and roll situations,
yeah.
And there's different ways to cover a ball screen and different ways to cover that roller. Your big can really hard hedge and jump out and really take away that guard from driving downhill, or you can kind of drop a little bit and play flat and have your guard get back. You know, we've done some switching in the past, because I think we've got guys that can move their feet pretty well.
So if it's the hard hedge,
there's got to be
help on the back end, right?
To take the roller.
Right.
So when that guard, you know, picks the ball, then Mbaké sprints back. You know, it's just you don't ever want, no matter what ball screen or coverage you're in, you never want that guard turning the corner on mm-hmm. your big. And so, with that said, that's a lot of lateral movement, you know, moving left to right, east to west, and I think he struggled with that in the last month or so. But we've always thought he's had really good feet, and it's never really been an issue with him covering the ball screen up until recently.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention that the help is needed sometimes because
it
looks like the big man is the one who blew the play.
Right, it's not. You see two guys in a ball screen, it's 2-on-2, but there's three other defenders on the backside, and it's their responsibility to take that role. So when Mbaké sprints back and then this help the helper, it's just all rotations and everyone having each other's back.
Back to offense on Mbaké, as he's a big topic tonight. He's back. He didn't play in that game against Air Force that the Falcons won 106-88, and we're talking to UNLV assistant Eric Brown. It looks like the lob is actually becoming a nice little weapon. I think you want to do it the right way and not have a guard caught in the air when he throws it. But
right.
Amari Hardy and Mbaké seem to have something that's pretty effective in terms of Amari getting deep in the lane and all of a sudden, gets the defense to move up and Mbaké's right there.
They do. And Mbaké gets open when he sprints to a screen, makes contact on that screen, and sprints out of it. You know, if he walks into it or doesn't set it or walks out of it, he's not going to get open. But by him setting that screen, now, that defense is in jeopardy, and he's able to get open on that roll. So we emphasize that a lot. We want JTT to set better screens. He's kind of in and out with his screen, but when he sets good screens, he gets open as well.
What does that mean, set a good screen?
Well, sometimes you see a big will run up to a guard, and he'll just, he'll screen the air, or he'll be in the right spot, and he won't hold it, and it'll open up too soon and allow that defender to go through. But, you want to center, get the center of your body kind of up where their top leg is, and you can't run into them and force yourself into them, but you just want to kind of get right there where they hit your chest.
I get the feeling young bigs get a little gun-shy on screens in terms of setting them because they get popped early in their career for moving screens.
They do, or if you see a kid like with one foul, like, okay, I can't get my second foul in the first half, Or if you've seen these bigs, they've had a bad stretch of 3 weeks where they got three illegal screens called, now it's in the back of their head. And you just need to go back on video and show them, hey, this is a good screen, this is a bad screen, and, just rep it.
All right, let's talk about what you saw in film. So we just talked about some of the inside play, right? It's going to help to have Mbaké in there to slow down a guy like Swan, slow down penetration. Now, I thought that was another issue in game one, is that they had way too much easy penetration. Like, the big man obviously has to help, but out front, there
right.
were way too many times he got deep.
And I agree. We talked about they made 9 threes, and 9 threes in the game is good. That's 27 points. He had 4 threes in the first half, 5 threes in the second, but it wasn't the three-point shooting. They had 56 points in the paint and another 17 points off the free throw line. So, that adds up to, my math is right, 73 points just in the paint and off free throws. And that's how they've been playing. They shoot 28% from three in conference. Nothing great. But you got to take away transition. You got to keep Walker out of the paint off his penetration. And then it comes down to Scotty and Swan in the post. And just can't let those guys have their way in the post.
Yeah, the 9 for 20 was disturbing from three, especially since, like you just mentioned, they're shooting 29% from three, which is very unlike Air Force, but it's right. actually dead last in the conference. This is not a great three-point shooting Air Force team.
And I think they're in 300s in the nation, but how it just goes to show you, it doesn't matter how good of a shooting team or not. If you're wide open, you know, at this level, you know, you can't dare anybody at this level. And because they were getting bias on the bounce and it turned into 4-on-3 in the backside, if you're there and there's no one contesting shots, it's going to go in at this level.
And it's funny, that penetration does make such a big difference to setting up the outside shot. I heard Marvin Menzies talking about this on the Red Zone on Fox 5. We're actually going to play some of the comments in a little bit. And he mentioned, you know, a big reason Fresno was able to limit you guys, because not only did you not make a lot of threes, you didn't even get your normal amount of threes off. I think the five games coming in against Fresno, you're averaging like 26.
We shot 15. 26
attempted threes, but a lot of that was because you couldn't crack
right.
you know, penetration, so there's no kickouts if you can't get into the lane.
And that's a credit to their defense, because the way they guard the ball screen and the way that, you know, they can guard the bounce, there was no 4-on-3. It wasn't getting by guys and putting them in rotations. It was work to get those three up, you know. And I've always said the teams that don't defend the three-point line well are teams that don't guard the bounce well. Because if you can't guard the bounce well, then it does turn into 4-on-3 and someone's getting an open shot in that corner.
Very important to close on. What are you guys working on for better starts? This is one of those, you'll drive yourself crazy, but
I mean,
it's unexplainable as to why. Because even in a great game like Boise, and you came back quickly, but you were down quickly there. I was like, oh, my God, are they going to be down?
It was 8-0. Your coach had to call timeout before the first media.
You mean 19-8 again here?
Right, and we've emphasized that. It's been an emphasis. We emphasized it before. Fresno obviously didn't work, but you know, you get into February, and every team across the country has mental fatigue to a certain degree because it's February. Okay, so you got to manage them differently. So we've come up with ways of managing practice different. You know, shortening shoot-arounds, changing our routine. You know, you get creative as a coach this time of year. And it's really more about managing. And so we'll see how we start tonight. But we've emphasized it to our guys.
And believe me, folks, I heard it before the Fresno game. I heard Coach LaFleur. I don't know if he was screaming, but I heard him mention multiple times. First five possessions, we
right.
need to set a tone. So it was delivered.
Well, and they set the tone, and it goes to show you, you know, the ball's going in the basket early for you. Okay, you see that ball go in a couple times. Okay, you're gonna be in the flow. You're gonna be in the flow the rest of the night. And we always talked about after our game that, you know, our transition defense struggled. I thought once we were in the half court, we were good defensively, but at the end of it, you know, they chucked in some shots at the end of the shot clock. So, you know, the start of the possession we were bad. At the end of the possession, they made some tough shots at the shot clock. But in the middle, you know, we thought we made some progress. We were pretty good.
And I assume some of the veteran leaders, the players, have mentioned a few times 106 points given up.
Oh yeah, that's been an emphasis. That's coming.
There you go.
And it's going to come up in the locker room in about 15 minutes from now again.
There you go. Insight into the pregame speech. All right, Coach, we appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see Eric Brown down on the floor in just a little bit. Mike Romala's coming up as we're getting you ready for a 7:30 tip.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews. Now, back to the Thomas and Mack for more Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We got to get a stop right here.
Taylor in the corner to Williams. Brings it out top, and it's stolen by Clyburn. Chris Clyburn in the lane. Chris underneath lays it up and in. Great effort by Clyburn.
One of the good moments in that Fresno game, not enough. 83-65, they lose. The Rebels do, as you hear the call there on Learfield, IMG College. Mike Romala sits in. It's Cofield as we're hanging out here at the Thomas & Mack and ready for Air Force against UNLV. 7:30 tip. Interesting numbers out, Mike, from – well, it's really not numbers out, but according to Ken Palm projections, people may be surprised at what the numbers say about UNLV the rest of the way. I'm going to go through the schedule here in a second. I'm going to tell you what the Ken Palm numbers say about the close to the season, but first – here's Marvin Menzies talking about the goal is still out there. Get better each game and get ready for the postseason.
Team out front is just got to take care of business, and they're going to end up there's 7 games to go. So, you know, a lot can happen in 7 games. However, if Reno holds true to serve, then, you know, they'll end up being the regular season champs. And so as a program, you always want to try to compete for either regular season or win the tournament. So the focus has always been for us to get better, which is in alignment with playing our best basketball in March anyway.
There you go. KenPom projections, Mike, have the standings as goes. Reno 17-1, Fresno and Utah State in second and third at 14-4 each. UNLV 11-7, New Mexico 9-9 in the five hole. Why is that important, the 4-5 hole?
Because you want to avoid playing Reno for as long as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the one team that if you go into that game, you have no expectation of winning. UNLV can play their best game of the season. And if Reno gives you a B-minus game, they're going to win handily. Like, that's going to be a comfortable win for the Wolfpack. So if you're UNLV, that would be probably your best-case scenario if that KenPom projection holds out. The schedule gets a little bit friendly over the next, you know, three games if you consider Air Force to be a game that you should win tonight.
That's a prediction of 5-2 down the stretch against Air Force, at San Jose, at Wyoming, home San Diego State, at Reno, home Boise, and at Colorado State. And the key is you've got a couple of teams there at the end. Well, you've got three of them. San Diego State, Boise, and Colorado State, who are all expected to be in the 8-10 range. You don't beat them, all of a sudden, you know, they're inching closer as opposed to being way ahead of them three games, according to KenPom, at 11-7 versus 8-10.
Yeah, it's when you look at that, San Diego State at home, Boise State at home, at Colorado State. Can UNLV get two of those three games? I think they'll get one. Can they get two? That might be the difference. And that's, you know, assuming they win these next three. If they take care of business against Air Force, at San Jose State, at Wyoming, that gets you to 9-5. And then if you can get two out of those final three, that gets you to 11, which is, you know, in this league, not the greatest accomplishment, but a pretty good step forward, I would say. And that, like you said, it gets you out of the line of fire from in terms of the standings and the seeding for the conference tournament.
And you guys have mentioned, I think you did on the Saturday pregame show, that, you know, part of it is, first of all, you got the game at Boise and you got the game at New Mexico. Those were really big wins. But you also get the benefit of not having to play, as it turns out, the second and third best team, it looks like, in Fresno and Utah State a second time.
It's a good draw.
Right?
Yeah.
And you need to take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And that means you can't stumble. This needs to be a win tonight. And certainly, it's a weird spot because it's a Saturday-Tuesday, and I don't know how many fans are going to be at either game, but you cannot lose one of those games against San Jose or Wyoming.
Those are two road games that if you were going to put, like, two on the schedule in terms of can UNLV win there, those are the two most likely places that you could win, right? Like, that's San Jose State, they're going to win that game no matter what. I'm pretty confident UNLV can win that one. At Wyoming, I think they'll come up with that one too. Like, those are two games you absolutely have to win in terms of road games. Those are the most winnable road games you can get in this conference. Got to take care of business. Like, that's what I feel like the final seven games are about for UNLV. You don't have to, at this point in the season, we kind of know what this team is. You don't have to blow me away with some unbelievable win. You don't have to reach another level of play that we didn't know you had. You don't have to flip the switch and become great. You just have to take care of business. Mm-hmm. Like, if you win the games that you should win in one of the 50-50 games, like, that's good enough for me if I'm gauging the progress of this program. And I think it would be good enough for most fans if you do that. If you take care of the business in the games that you should win, 11 wins in Mountain West, top, you know, three in the conference standings, it's hard for people to find fault in that, I would think.
Biggest goal here these last seven games is play more consistent defense. We're going to get into that. Marvin Menzies had some comments about his defense and where they are right now, so we'll hit that on the way back, and we'll also hear from the Air Force side with Dave Filipovich.
Cofield and Company will be back in 90 seconds. Keep it here on ESPN Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Taylor down the left side. Taylor underneath, feeds Grimes. Blocked from behind by Amari Hardy. Great play. And now a loose ball on the floor and a tie-up. It'll be Rebel ball with 12.8 to go. Terrific defense by Amari Hardy.
Need more of that tonight. More consistent defensive effort throughout against Air Force. Certainly it was a problem up at Clune as the Falcons hung 106 on the Rebels. Mike Romales here from the Las Vegas Sun. Tip in 55 minutes, running Rebel warm-up in 25 minutes. Mike, let's talk defense, and let's use Marvin Menzies' words to grade what's been going on recently, and especially against Fresno. These are all courtesy of Fox 5 and the Reb Zone, as Marvin Menzies states the obvious here, that, yeah, the defense still needs work.
We've got a lot of things that we need to do better. Defensively, probably is the biggest thing. We're up and down on offense, but defensively, we got to get back to a lot of different things that we can discuss as the show unfolds. But that's the big deal right now. And then from there, we just keep grinding, man. There's no shortcut for success in this conference. You just got to put in the work.
What do you see on defense? What do you see, especially against Fresno?
I see a team that they have capable athletes. In when you look at the numbers, the advanced metrics, in isolation plays, in pick and roll, in situations like that where it's man on the ball, they're not terrible. They're not really bad. Where they're really bad is handling cutters, getting out to spot up shooters, anything that involves like off the ball defense, where this team tends to get disconnected. They tend to get miss their rotations or a step slow on plays that are away from the ball. And when you get to this point in the season, like, you may be able to get away with that early in the year when other opponents, like, their offenses are not, like, clicked in at that point, and they're still sort of thinking through their possessions and thinking through the next pass and stuff like that. But when you get here and you're 25 games in, I think Utah State was the best example. They're just zipping the ball around, and UNLV has no chance to catch up with it because they're still a step slow in their rotations, and those players at this point in the year know exactly where they're going with the ball before they catch it. And UNLV, they have to get better in that area, like off the ball, and just sort of, it's one thing to get down in a stance and defend the ball. That's simple. Everyone knows how to do that. It's just a matter of, you know, effort and athletic ability. At this level, when you're off the ball, you've got to start thinking. You've got to play as a team. You've got to know where your teammates are. You've got to expect. You've got to anticipate their movements. Everyone has to be on the same page. That's where UNLV, in my opinion, is just not playing well enough.
Here's Marvin Menzies talking about getting a chance to watch the film after the game.
First, let me say, there weren't as many that once you go back and watch film, you know, it's always a little different once you go home and you watch the film. But there weren't as many as I felt, you know, the emotion of losing. You go, man, we got to get better at this, we got to get better at that. Then you go watch film, you go, it wasn't as bad as I thought. Like, we did it, we're getting to the right places. Now we got to, you know, contesting a shot, right? We're getting there now on the catch, and then we don't get in and invade their airspace, as Preston Laird, one of my assistants, always likes to use that term, and really, like, you know, get up and really challenge the shot.
What do you think of that? The invades the airspace.
That's, shooters are, how comfortable are you going to let those opposing shooters be? Are you going to just put a hand up and let them, you know, because these guys, they take hundreds and hundreds of shots with people running at them, putting a hand in their face. That's what they practice for.
You'd be amazed, folks, when you're sitting on the floor, how many shots guards take, and at the end, they're completely blind to the hoop.
You don't think it's
a feel thing that you're set up, you can see the hoop, but at the end on the release, a lot of times you can't see anything.
And as a layperson, don't you feel like these shots are all going to get blocked? Like, when you're at the court level, you're like, how is he going to get that shot off? And then they do. The windows are that small, so these guys are used to shooting into that. So you've really, really got to contest a shot in order to affect the way that someone releases the ball or to speed them up. That's the biggest difference between, I feel, practice and game, is how quickly people get off their shot. In practice, you've got a little time, you've got space, you can sort of let your shot unwind. In a game, you've just got to fire it up. So can you speed people up like that when you close out? UNLV has not been great against spot-up shooters this year. It's been a trend all year. Guys get open, and they just have they can take their time, and we've seen UNLV get hurt by that.
Here's more specifics on defensive improvement and some of the failings against Fresno from Marvin Menzies.
We got lost a lot in defensive transition. That hurt us a lot. And that was an area we were hurting bad in the beginning of the year. And then we shored up. We took a step back in that area last night. I mean, they had 23 of their 80-whatever was just off of pushing and scoring. They're a good team, but we're capable of playing much better than that. So the defensive transition, challenging shots, not just getting to the midline, but then stepping up and taking the charge, reading whether the ball handler is still being defended by your guy or whether you need to help. You know, those basketball IQ things and experience things are the areas that we got to just keep grinding and getting better at.
Let's talk offense, because the other glaring thing in the Fresno game as they lose by 18 was a very small number of made threes and not that many attempts as compared to what they've been doing in the previous five games when they were firing up, I think it was an average of 26 per game. They only got off 15. This is really interesting in what Marvin Menzies talks about with Justin Hudson's Fresno defense and why there just weren't enough quality threes fired up by the Rebels.
Shooting threes really starts with guarding the ball off the bounce. You know, Coach Brown and I were talking about that the last couple of days. Like, if you keep guys in front of you, then a team like Fresno State, who really feeds off of making that extra pass to a wide open three-point shooter because somebody helped to rotate it, they do a really good job of that. I mean, they had three or four of their threes where somebody was in the paint and threw it out for a three. Well, if that guy never gets to the paint and you can keep the ball in front of you and guard it and make them take tough twos, then you really help yourself at not being able to or being able to defend the three.
That's something that I believe Tyler Bischoff is very big on in UNLV. The way that they ask Mbaka Jiang in particular to play defense, they ask him to get out on pick and rolls and hedge and turn the ball handler back towards half court, and then they ask Mbaka to recover and scramble back down into the paint and get down there. And Jiang is good. He's athletic. He can move his feet, but that's a lot of ground for him to cover, and if a ball handler is able to turn the corner on him and get into the paint, that's when your rotations get messed up because guys have to help. They have to get Jiang's back and cover that space, and that's when you have those passes, those easy passes to the corner. If you drive into the paint, like the first place, just naturally where your lines of vision are, both corners, and if one of those guys are open, that's the easiest shot in the game, and that's where UNLV gets hurt. And on offense, we don't see a lot of that from UNLV in terms of creating three-pointers through penetration. I would have to look up the exact numbers, but just from the eye test, I don't think they have a lot of guys who dribble penetrate at that level. Amori Hardy is one, but Noah Robotham is not that kind of point guard. He gets in there once in a while just on like craftiness, but he's not breaking guys down.
I think Clyburn is, but I think he's penetrating to score.
He's
penetrating to draw contact. He's penetrating to use his left and finish.
Yeah, so just naturally, I'm not sure if they have the guys who are built to play that game. So if you wanted that style of offense where guys are driving and kicking, you'd have to coach it all season from the first day of training camp and drill it into them like, hey, if you get a foot in the paint, these are your outlet passes. These are the places that are going to be open against the kind of defense we expect our opponent to play tonight. I don't know if UNLV plays that style. I mean, we've seen Menzies shift away from his sort of post-heavy offense this year, but I don't know if they're fully engaged in that sort of game where, hey, we've got a 13-footer, but let's pass that up and get the open three instead. So you get games like Fresno State where some games you're shooting 30, and then you get a game like Fresno State where they close those gaps, and you're not getting them in rotation, and you only take 15.
Who's the second best team that you've seen in person in this conference? I'm throwing Fresno and Utah State your way.
I would go with Utah State at this point.
Why?
They just looked really locked in when you played. They looked like the best coached team in terms of they know exactly what they want to do offensively and defensively. No one's out of place. Everyone's playing two passes ahead. And Keita is just a monster. Like, it's not Merrill and a bunch of shooters anymore.
No.
Like, that guy changes things for them defensively. Like, they're not the team. They're not that soft three-point shooting team that you think they might be because, you know, Utah State, they've got a monster in the middle who defensively just changes the game. We saw it the first 2 minutes against UNLV.
Mm-hmm.
He blocked two shots. He challenged two. He didn't get credit for two blocks, but he should have because he's making UNLV throw up air balls from inside the paint because he's just so long and he's challenging these shots. I like Utah State a lot. Fresno State is good, and I like their guards, and they are versatile and they're tough, but I think I'd go Utah State at this point.
On the way back, we'll turn our attention to Air Force. We'll hear from Dave Filipovich, who was on our morning show today, and we'll get you some predictions here as we're heading towards Running Rebel warm-up in 16 minutes.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas.
It's Dave Filipovich, the Air Force coach, as we're getting ready for a 7:30 tip. Air Force, monstrous offensive performance in meeting number one. What was the points per possession? I was trying to recall the number. Was it over 1.4?
I would have to
like 1.37. It was crazy.
They shot 59.7%. They're shooting 60% for a game. They cannot do that again, right?
And it was the amount of the quick buckets right near the hoop that, you know, put that points per possession over the top.
Yeah, you're not shooting 60% on tough shots. You know, you're doing that because you're getting a lot of easy baskets and a lot of like just uncontested layups. So And I think it was 59 points in the paint or 56 points in the paint. So, yeah, they any way that you can beat a team offensively, Air Force did that to UNLV last time.
Here's Pilipovic from the morning show talking about just how crazy that was with that offensive explosion and how it happened.
We wanted to push a little bit of tempo. We gained some confidence early by making some shots. Again, we got some rebounds, offensive rebounds, scored. And we made some threes. I think we had 9 threes in that game. And it just kind of steamrolled for us. Can we do that again sometime during the year? I don't know. But that was one of those days where everything was going well for us and maybe not so well for them. And we were able to score the basketball, and we just kept going.
It actually went well for UNLV offensively. They had a good offensive game. They made everything, too. But 88 points was not enough because they just could not get stops in any way. Air Force shot 45% from three in the game. For some reason, Air Force is not a good three-point shooting team. Only 29% in conference. It was a bizarre game, and it went downhill, too. You could kind of, like he said, it steamrolled, and UNLV just lost its confidence and kind of lost its bearing defensively against Air Force.
And that's sort of when the crowd sort of started to get into it, which no one expected going in. So if you can prep your kids saying, like, the crowd is going to be a factor tonight, we've got to be ready for that, then you can, I think, like, you're... I got the feeling that the team was blindsided by the impact that the crowd had, as was I. Like, no, I don't think anyone expected that. So, yeah, once things started going poorly, that was one of UNLV's worst games in terms of dealing with sort of adversity in-game. Once things started going wrong, we've seen them, you know, sort of, they get off to slow starts every game. Like, we've talked about this before. They're down by 8 or 10 within the first 4 minutes of every game. So just on that alone, they're fighting through adversity in pretty much every game. They've got to fight back. They're pretty good at hanging around and cutting back into it and sort of making a game of it after that. Air Force was sort of the one time where we didn't see that from them. They just let it get too big, and it got out in front of them, and they were not able to make that run. So tonight is a chance for them to get back. I feel like Noah Robotham, if you asked him those stats from that game, I feel like he would know every statistic from that game. 106 points, 59%, 1.4 points possession. I feel like a lot of players would have a lot of those stats memorized because that's not something you forget easily.
I thought Air Force also set a tone early, and it was almost demoralizing, by throwing the ball down to Ryan Swan. And when you got a post player and no one can stop the post player, it just breaks your spirit. And without Jong in there on help defense or directly on him, they didn't really have a big to slow him down because JTT had trouble and got into foul trouble, and Nick Blair was just not big enough to contain Ryan Swan. This time it's a little bit different, and Pilipovic talked about the fact that Jong is back and he can be a difference maker on the UNLV D.
And you think maybe if he's in there, maybe we'll see some zone.
Right.
You know, and we haven't shot the ball well this year like we've had in the past. UNLV's top in our league in three-point shooting percentage. We're at the bottom. But I know we've got some guys who can make some shots, so... You know, he changes the game because he can block shots, but also just being there and altering some shots. So it'll be a little different prep for us than it was the first time.
You think UNLV is better prepared or better equipped to handle Ryan Swan this time around?
I think they are to open the game, but as we know, and I'm not saying the officials are screwing over UNLV, but they've got young bigs, and oftentimes they're in foul trouble, so... It depends on how the game is called, because I'll tell you this, if they throw it down to Ryan Swan, he is going to look for contact, and if they're allowed to play, then guys will stay on the floor. If not, if there's some silly fouls drawn, then they're back to being small again against them.
I look at the UNLV roster, and I don't see a guy physically who like profiles as the type that can match up against Ryan Swan. Like, Jong comes back, he's not the primary defender on him. Like, we saw Swan, he saw Nick Blair on him in the post, and he just lowered his shoulder, and he bulldozed him. He had no chance. You put a big guy on him, he steps out and shoots the three-pointer or the long two, and he can make that, 6'7", 230, 240. UNLV doesn't really have someone who profiles like that. Tervell Beck, maybe, but he hasn't played, and he's not a defensive guy. So I'm not sure. I don't expect Air Force to score 100-plus again, but I fully expect Ryan Swan to have his way with whoever UNLV throws out there. Marvin said he's done with the junk defenses. He says, we need to play straight-up defense and learn how to do that. We can't do the junk defenses, so you can't throw a triangle and two at him.
Mike, I'll tell you, if they have foul trouble and they have to go small against Ryan Swan, well, I can't believe we're talking this much about the guy, but it's been back-to-back years now that he's given him trouble. Last year it was drawing McCoy out to the perimeter and playing as a stretch five or four, and McCoy couldn't cover him. If they have to go small, then if they get similar results, Air Force, out of Ryan Swann, then they're going to have to double them. UNLV's going to have to throw someone down there. And at that point, you're like, hey, we're going to pick our poison. We'll take our chance that the ball gets kicked out. And this team continues to shoot 29% from three in conference.
As we talked about it before, like, if you double Ryan Swann and he can make a competent first pass, UNLV's in rotation. Like, they're rotating behind that double team.
Yeah.
And Air Force is a team that they are well coached. They'll pass the ball. They'll penetrate. They'll do that one dribble, find the next guy. One dribble, find the next guy. And they'll never let you catch up to the ball. And that's how they tore UNLV apart the first time. So can they get a handle on Swann? You look at the box score from that first game, and I think he only scored 22 points. I mean, maybe took like he was 8 of 14 from the field. And you think, oh, that's not that big of a game. You know, that's a good game. But just the way that it was so easy and the impact that he had offensively, the stats don't even do it justice. So can UNLV find a matchup for him? Juiston may have been the guy. He's out. Beck is in the doghouse again. He's out. Nick Blair did not look like he can handle it. Maybe Blair has played enough since then and he's been schooled enough that he can put up a better effort this time. But that's what I'll be interested in seeing, how they handle Ryan Swann if they don't play a junk defense.
We'll make picks here in less than 90 seconds, but really quick, news on the recruiting front. Julian Strother, in town, 2020 player, announced his top 10. UNLV is still alive.
That's good.
Yeah.
Hometown school, you figure they'll be in his final 10, 5, 3, whatever he gets down to his final rankings, you expect UNLV to be
there. The sister is on the Lady Rebels, and his list has Washington, Florida, Florida State. He just visited Gonzaga, USC, Cal, Marquette, Oklahoma, and UCLA. Hey, Lon, you're in Oklahoma. Stay out of Vegas. But UNLV is on the list. All right, prediction time. We'll use the spread to set up the game. It's a 9-point spread, and the total is 143.5. What do you think?
It's a UNLV 76-73. Close game.
76-73. I am going to go. So you're over. I'm going to go over as well. I think this is going to be another highly offensive game. 80-73. UNLV will win, but will not cover. That'll make it 9 straight times against Air Force. They have not covered. Mike, we appreciate it. Go to at Mike Romala on Twitter, LasVegasSun.com. We've got Running Rebel warm-up on the way here in just a couple of minutes with John and Robert. Stick around. Tip at 7:30. Air Force in town to take on your Running Rebels.